everyone. Welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you are new here. My name is Madison, and I make video essays on trending topics online. I'm also a singer and a songwriter, so if you liked that song in the intro, you can stream it on all platforms. Links are in the description. Today, we are talking about mothers.
You want to talk about mothers?
Specifically, the war on mothers in this country, dare I say. Specifically, motherhood and the institution of motherhood in the United States and the construct of the nuclear family and how it has failed moms in this country. Yes, this is a heavy one today, but a really important video. And like many of the videos that I research, I found some really interesting information that was really eye-opening. So in recent years, we've seen a growing conversation around motherhood and the harsh realities of raising kids in America. As women, we have been sold this fantasy around the concept of motherhood and how it's meant to be this rewarding, selfless act, the most feminine thing you can do as a woman. And although there are plenty of mothers who find it fulfilling and it is a very selfless act, it isn't the end-all be-all to your existence as a woman. Motherhood is not only considered a woman's greatest possible achievement, but also our sole purpose. However, women have become a lot more open about their maternal struggles, whether it's from postpartum depression or birth complications, or simply being transparent about their feelings on motherhood. Many mothers who dreamed of being moms their whole life realize that they want more out of life than just being a mom, and it's not enough just to be a mother.
My dream since I was a little girl was to have a baby. I wanted to be a mom. And then I get pregnant and I have a daughter. I have a girl. Oh my God. Dream come true. I regret making being a mom my dream. My daughter is the cutest, most beautiful, fun, smart little girl, and I love her more than anything on this planet. But I was dreaming of a life that I had no idea what it was about. It's not just a few moments of like, no, don't do that. A few smelly diapers and you're just gonna have this happy-go-lucky family. That's not real life. You know what is real life? Me being at home, thinking that being a stay-at-home mom was a dream, and I actually was getting dignity. And now we're in a position where I don't really have a choice but to stay home with her right now. But being a mother is the most draining experience of your life. It changes every single person around you, every single friend, every family member, the relationship with your husband, the relationship with yourself. I don't recognize myself at all. None of my clothes fit me. The world is the most terrifying place that it's ever been in. And I'm terrified of what her future is going to look like. I can't take a shit by myself. I can't eat when I want to. I can't go out and just get a Dunkin' whenever I want to. I can't film a video whenever I want to. I wish I got it earlier, that this isn't a life path that I have to take as a woman. If you are child-free, sometimes all you have to know is that you would be a good mother. And then choose to not have children. I am trying to save you. Dream bigger. Because hot take, it's not worth it.
I think this kind of along with other reasons that I will explain later, is why we are seeing more and more women opting out of child rearing. But I have noticed that in this growing conversation around having kids versus not having kids, child-free people are over here and moms, parents are over here. We as a society have become a lot more open to the idea of a woman choosing to not have kids or even getting married. But old habits die hard, and single / child-free women face misogynistic remarks from both men and women for not having kids, and find themselves having to defend their choices over and over again, constantly being bombarded by coworkers, friends, family members for being single or for not having kids, and, you know, being worried and concerned about their happiness. And on the other side, we have moms and parents who are mocked for having kids because we know how hard it can be, and we kind of look down on people who choose to have kids in this day and age in some ways. Some consider it selfish or narcissistic to have kids, or they just, again, think they're kind of dumb for making such a life-altering decision that seems miserable. And when it comes to women, both sides are struggling under the patriarchy. Like, we all suffer in the end. And I don't think that all mothers or all single people are at odds, but like I said, both sides feel like they have to vehemently defend themselves and defend their choices due to the expectations of the patriarchy. And we see this with that viral clip of Chapo Roan in her Call Her Daddy interview, where she talked about how all her friends who are parents are miserable.
All of my friends who have kids are in hell. I actually don't know anyone who's like happy and has children. at this age. Anyone who has like light in their eyes, anyone who has slept.
But before we get into that, today's video is sponsored by Typology. So I think many of us can agree that the most important aspect of your beauty routine isn't your makeup, but your skincare. If you like skincare with a little extra oomph, then Typology is the brand for you. Typology is a cruelty-free and vegan skincare brand with products formulated and manufactured in France. Their formulas are minimalist and made with over 80% ingredients of natural origin. So most of the products I used on my face today are from Typology, and I want to share some of those products with you today. First is their tinted serum made with vitamin C, squalane, and aloe vera. This product is super lightweight. It's not like a foundation at all. It really is a tinted serum. It feels very moisturizing on the face, but again, not too heavy. I used a brush to blend this in, and it worked really well. The next product I used was the concealer made with caffeine and niacinamide. These two ingredients allow for the concealer to reduce any puffiness or darkness, both over time and instantly. I really like this concealer. Like everybody else, I'm looking for a concealer that can cover up any dark spots or dark circles, and it definitely worked really well. And again, it's very lightweight. I really like the consistency of it. It had good coverage, but it also doesn't feel too heavy or thick. And I also used the lip oil and black cherry. I really liked this product and was probably my favorite next to the concealer. I've never used a lip oil before, and I've always wanted to, but I never went out of my way to buy it. This is made with vitamin E, squalane, and jojoba oil. It feels very moisturizing on the lips and is lightweight, but it's not like a lip gloss that can feel kind of like gooey on your lips. It really like sinks into the skin, which I really like. And I like this black cherry color. It just adds a nice little natural tint. And I actually used it on my cheeks too as like a blush. And yeah, I really like the way it goes on. It feels really good and light. And I will definitely be using this in replacement of lip gloss if I want something that's a little less hassle. And I also want to give some honorable mentions to the moisturizer and the glow drops. I use this as like a base layer slash primer, and I really like the way it looks on my skin, especially the glow drops. It just gives like a nice radiant look to my face, and I will definitely continue to use this even just on its own to give my face a nice like shimmer. Sometimes I just need a little extra like glow to my skin, especially since it's spring, it's raining all the time, the sun is not out, so my skin can feel a little dull, and this definitely makes me look a lot brighter. So I highly recommend Typology. I really like their products, and I think you will too. By clicking the link in my description, you can receive a free shimmering dry oil with vitamin C and 5 organic botanical oils with a purchase of $40 or more on the Typology Paris website. This offer is available for 1 week and 1 week only from the published date of this video, so act fast and click that link, baby. Anyways, thank you so much again to Typology for sponsoring today's video. Now let's get back to our scheduled programming. Thank you. So a couple weeks ago, Chaperone was on Call Her Daddy, and she kind of made this offhand comment about how all the people she knows who have kids her age are miserable. This caused a lot of backlash. A lot of mothers felt the need to defend themselves and talk about how happy they are as moms, and a lot of people defended Chaperone and agreed with her. And whenever something like this goes super viral, I feel like it does represent a sort of fever pitch in this conversation, because a lot of people have said what she has said. A lot of people have expressed their struggles about motherhood, or single people have said, like, I don't want to be a mom because I've seen other people suffer. And so I think this video clip, this whole conversation, sparks an important question that needs to be asked and understood. Why are mothers miserable? I mean, there are plenty of mothers who are not, but she didn't say it for no reason, and again, other people have been saying it, and so I really want to dive deep into where this comes from. If every mother in America was happy and had no complaints about motherhood, I'm sure there would still be plenty of people who choose not to have kids, and that choice is a lot more accepted now. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of issues when it comes to the institution of motherhood, and there are so many examples of how America has failed mothers and has led to mothers feeling miserable due to isolation, due to childcare expenses, healthcare expenses. The list goes on. I'm going to dive into all of that today in this video. So the first thing we have to address when it comes to motherhood in the United States is the structure of the nuclear family. A nuclear family, also known as an elementary family, atomic family, or conjugal family, is a term for a family group consisting of parents and their children, one or more, typically living in one home residence. You know, the husband and the wife, the 2.5 kids, and a single family home in the suburbs surrounded by a picket fence. So there's this general idea that the nuclear family is a sort of modern invention. However, there's evidence of a nuclear family going back to the year 4600 from a burial site in Germany. The nuclear family is also widespread throughout England way before industrialization, going back to the 17th century, and some researchers think even going back to the 13th century. However, the nuclear family became a lot more popular during the industrialization period once people moved from the country to the city for job opportunities. David Brooks, the author of The Nuclear Family Was a Mistake, states that as factories opened in the big U.S. cities in the late 19th and early 20th century, young men and women left their extended families to chase the American dream. These young people married as soon as they could. A young man on a farm might wait until 26 to get married. In the lonely city, men married at 22 or 23. From 1890 to 1960, the average age of first marriage dropped by 3.6 years from men and 2.2 years from women. And the nuclear family became so popular during this time because the structure of the nuclear family really strived under the conditions of the mid-20th century. Think about how heavily enforced gender roles were at this time. There were corporate bans against women working outside of the home. For one thing, most women were relegated to the home. Many corporations, well into the mid-20th century, barred married women from employment. Companies could hire single women, but if those women got married, they would have to quit. Demeaning and disempowering treatment of women was rampant. Women spent enormous numbers of hours trapped inside the home under the headship of their husband, raising children. What is also unique about this time period that is different to now, which I find very interesting, is the connection between nuclear families and the community aspect. For another thing, nuclear families in this era were much more connected to other nuclear families than they are today, constituting a modified extended family. As a sociologist Eugene Litwack calls it, a coalition of nuclear families in a state of mutual dependence. Even as late as the 1950s, before television and air conditioning had fully caught on, people continued to live on one another's front porches and were part of one another's lives. Friends felt free to discipline one another's children. Which, that last sentence alone feels like such a foreign concept and is so not acceptable now. I think I saw this actually played out in Desperate Housewives, if you're familiar with that show. One of Lynette's kids was across the street at the neighbor's house, Mrs. McCluskey, and I think she spanked one of her kids, Lynette's kids, not her own. And, you know, Lynette got really upset. That's a good example of how different childcare and community is now versus in the 50s. This idea of having a coalition of nuclear families, as the quote states, is almost unheard of now. We don't really depend or rely on our neighbors or even our extended family as much as we used to. I'm sure there are outliers and people in the comments will say, well, no, I grew up in a community where it was like this, but overall, generally, we don't really live like this anymore in the modern era. To be a young homeowner in a suburb like Elmhurst in the 50s was to participate in a communal enterprise that only the most determined loner could escape. Barbecues, coffee clutches, volleyball games, babysitting co-ops, and constant bartering of household goods, child rearing by the nearest parents who happened to be around, neighbors wandering through the door at any hour without knocking, all these were devices by which young adults who had been set down in a wilderness of tract homes made a community. It was a life lived in public. I mean, I can't imagine someone on my street just like wandering into my house without even as much of a knock. And I certainly didn't grow up that way. Reading this quote was funny because, you know, the right wing and Republicans are so anti-socialism and believe that there is no room for such a concept in the United States. But I mean, this is a clear example of socialism or communism. I mean, we talk about communal enterprise, bartering. It's kind of ironic because we're talking about the 1950s, which is seemingly this like golden age of America that they're so desperately trying to get back to. Discussing this also makes me think about other cultures, right? We see plenty of cultures outside of the United States or immigrants in the United States maintain this strong community and family bond. A lot of people outside of the United States don't leave their parents' house until they get married, or when their parents get old, they move in with them or they move in with their parents. Community and family norms are a lot different in the United States now compared to other cultures outside of America. In a podcast, David Brooks discusses his book, and the topic of Black families and the extended family system comes up. Black people tend to maintain a extended family system. Nuclear and extended families don't have this like hard cutoff, but instead are embraced and lumped together because, as we all know, community is really powerful and can be a source of resilience and cultural preservation and continuation. When you're a marginalized person who faces oppression, having a strong, tight-knit community, especially amongst family, is really important. And I want to dive deeper into how the government supports or doesn't support mothers in this country and why motherhood is not only hard, but really expensive. So if you didn't know, maternity leave in America really sucks. It's trash. You basically don't get paid anything. The United States and Australia are the only industrialized countries that do not provide paid leave to women in connection with childbirth. This policy is in opposition to the World Health Organization's recommendations for the provision of a minimum 16 weeks of leave after childbirth to ensure optimal growth of the infant, proper bonding between mother and child, and the health of both mother and infant. Even the World Health Organization is like 16 weeks at least, and America's just like, nope. And when you compare America to other countries and how they deal with maternity leave, you see how glaring the difference is. For example, Sweden offers 18 months of parental leave with 12 months of 80% wage replacement, and Germany provides 14 weeks of paid maternity leave at 100% of previous earnings. That being said, America's a big place with 50 states, so each state has different laws. For example, the state of New York offers birth allowance for beginning year benefit, also known as baby, appropriately named, which provides $100 per month during pregnancy and $1,200 at birth for low-income parents. So lack of paid leave is a huge issue, which just further disincentivizes women from having children and also contributes to the discrimination of women in the workforce. Married women or women with children are legally allowed to work in this country, but you're kind of left between a rock and a hard place when you have to go months without being paid after childbirth, and it essentially forces women out of the workplace. Not to mention, there are plenty of examples of women literally being fired from the jobs for getting pregnant. There are laws against that now, but clearly it had to become a law for a reason and is a serious problem. Speaking of things that are expensive and not universal, childcare. The childcare that does exist is very pricey. A Care.com study shows that Americans spend 20% of their income on childcare alone on average. Now, again, individual states, these laws vary. New York is providing grants for childcare in underserved areas. However, Project 2025 actually states that instead of providing universal daycare, funding should go to parents either to offset the cost of staying home with the child or to pay for familial in-home childcare, which, who is this probably going to affect most? Mothers. And eliminating Head Start could impact more than 750,000 children in America. Childcare is so expensive, but before you can even get to hold the baby, the chances of you going into thousands of dollars of debt is pretty high. The median cost for an in-network C-section in the United States last year was about $15,500, while the median cost of a vaginal birth with no complications was almost $13,000, according to Fair Health's cost of giving birth tracker. With all that money being spent and us being in a developed country, the United States has the highest maternal mortality rate in the developed world, many deaths occurring within 42 days postpartum. Just like deadass too expensive to have kids. Most people just can't afford it. I mean, a study by LendingTree estimates an average cost of raising a child is $300,000 per kid over 18 years. Average salary in the US is $60,000 a year, so it's just the math isn't mathing. What I find so interesting about the structure of the nuclear family in the United States is how heavily affected it is by the way America as a country is structured. I mean, we always talk about how America lacks walkable cities and America was built for cars and how that negatively impacts us socially. And that's why families are so isolated and why parents and specifically mothers feel so alone. And the way America was built keeps mothers inside the house. The post-war suburbs are a physical enforcer on the nuclear family. Suburban sprawl was designed to create more privacy and more space, which seems ideal for a family of four, for example. But in turn, that created unwalkable neighborhoods not suited for this shared public life that we discussed earlier in the video. Over the past two generations, the physical space separating nuclear families was widened. Before, sisters-in-law shouted greetings across the street at each other from their porches. Kids would dash from home to home and eat out of whoever's fridge was closest by. But lawns have grown more expensive and porch life has declined, creating a buffer of space that separates the house and family from everyone else. Bring back porch culture, please. Let's normalize sitting on the stoop. We need it. I'm sure you've heard the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, and it's true. It really does, and the lack of village is why we see so much suffering amongst parents today. The lack of public parks and plazas, mixed use buildings is why we see a reduction in socialization amongst young people. I mean, people of all ages, really, especially like casual interactions that don't require you to spend money. There's a lack of community support because of this, lack of generational blending. I mean, I can't tell you the last time I spoke to a child. I just don't interact with them at all. Not that I have to, but you know, I think as a society, we would be better off if we, you know, interacted with our elders more, interacted with younger kids. I think in conjunction with this anti-parenting, anti-motherhood sentiment, there is a massive anti-child sentiment as well. I get it, kids can be annoying and you don't want to sit next to a crying kid on an airplane, but at the end of the day, children are a part of our society, whether you like it or not. You were a child, we were all children once, and there's just like a serious lack of tolerance for kids. And if not only is there a lack of third spaces, but you need a car to get everywhere. And last time I checked, babies can't drive. Kids can't drive. I mean, some kids can drive. If you're 16, you can get a license in the US. I mean, just living in America can be really isolating if you don't have a car, which just causes mothers and children to be more isolated and puts on more pressure for women to be homemakers. A woman with no children, for example, bored and restive in her city apartment, is driven by her sense of futility and emptiness to move, for the children's sake, to a spacious house in the suburbs. The house takes longer to clean, the shopping and gardening and chauffeuring and do-it-yourself routines are so time-consuming that for a while, the emptiness seems solved. But when the house is furnished and the children are in school, the empty feeling returns. And that's how she gets addicted to Quaaludes. No, I'm just kidding. Not really, though. There were a lot of housewives doing all sorts of drugs back in the day. Or you could just get a lobotomy. That always fixes things. Anyway, I'm getting off track. But yeah, it's crazy to think how urban planning is actually quite gendered and again plays into gender roles and the nuclear family system. The built environment assumes that women stay home and men commute. Even think about cars. I remember hearing on a few different occasions that cars are literally built for men and men are more likely to survive car accidents for this reason. For the sake of every member of the family needs a head. This means father, not mother. He is not just a substitute mother, even though he's ready and willing to do his share of bathing, feeding, and comforting playing. He is a link with the outside world he works in. If in that world he is interested, courageous, tolerant, constructive, he will pass on these values to his children. This idea that the father is the link between the home and the outside world actually reminds me of the dynamic between Lynette Scavo and Tom Scavo from Desperate Housewives. And so, men recreated their own childhood in suburbia and made mothers of their wives. Men fell for the mystique without a murmur of dissent. It promised them mothers for the rest of their lives, both as a reason for their being and as an excuse for their failures. Which, that also comes up a lot in Desperate Housewives, specifically between Tom and Lynette.
Oh! What are you doing? Well, your grandmother's not here to serve you.
I don't mind, dear.
See, she wants to. Soda, Graham? Make it two.
Boys! Penny, I have to get the meat, so you get the sodas.
Oh, why?
Why?
We have to take care of our men.
Penny, sit. In this house, the women don't wait on the men. The men get off their asses and help themselves.
This all started because Tom is not stepping up in his own household. Lynette and Tom are married. They clearly have four children, and they've just had a baby, which she didn't want. But this glass-tapping thing is something that Tom's sons learn from him. As soon as his mother, who's obviously a very old-fashioned, housewifey kind of girl, comes around, Tom starts tapping on his glass to be served, like his father used to. Yet the grandmother is trying to normalize her jumping up to serve them. But anytime the family dynamic is out of whack, it's because a man is not on his job as a parent. What a lot of people do not realize is that men are supposed to be standing with their wives, with the caretaker role. The children get cared for, but men want to put themselves on par with another child and be caretaken by the women in his life. But when it's time to make financial decisions and shit like that, all of a sudden he wants to go into a role that even supersedes a caretaker. He wants to be the big boss.
But now I want to talk more about the social aspect and what people are saying, specifically parents, when it comes to their friendships and how their friendships really suffer once they have kids. There's an article by The Cut titled, "My Friends Abandoned Me When They Had Kids." I came across this article through a TikTok by one of my favorite creators on TikTok, Tell the Bees.
A couple of weeks ago when I did my video on Should Your Partner Be Your Best Friend, my culture analysis playlist at the bottom, people were like, I spend 47 hours a day with my partner. I'm always with my man. I don't have friends. I always want to be with him. And I'm like, okay, friendship is extremely devalued in this country, which is exactly what I said in that video. And I've seen videos. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I read a lot of advice columns. There are so many millions of people in this country who are completely isolated as this person because people get into relationships and they spend all of their time with their partner and they like stop talking to their friends. And then when they have kids, they're like, where's my community? And it's like, well, you wanted to have double dates with other couples. You wanted to have mom friends. There's this sort of element of surprise that people like aren't showing up for you and aren't there for you when a lot of people who are in this situation, when you're the last person to get married in your friend group, I've read advice columns and listened to podcasts and I've seen it happen in real life in my life where it's like people don't show up for you the same way because they have kids, right? They're busy. They don't have the money. They want to go on vacation with their partners. They want to go on vacation with their kids. They are like completely devoting themselves to their families, which is fine. I'm not saying it's not good or fine. People get married and they see their single friends less. People have kids and they see their single friends never.
And here we start to see this divide between childless people and parents that I discussed in the beginning of this video. Both sides in this case also struggle with loneliness. Parents are lonely and so are the childless friends who feel abandoned. I'm getting sick of being the last person asked how they're doing at every dinner table. I am making efforts to understand what their new lives are like, but the only consistent questions I get about my own are, how's dating? Seems fun? Or very simplistic questions about work without much follow-up. I think fundamentally your life just changes when you have a kid, and there's a mourning that you have to experience when your friend has a kid. At the end of the day, like, it is just a different life stage that both people are going through. It's kind of like, you know, when we talk about age gap relationships, it doesn't work because when you're 21 versus 31, you are in completely different life stages. So there's a lack of compatibility. You know, you can have the same interest or have similar opinions or whatever it may be, but if you're not going in the same direction in life, it's really hard to maintain a relationship, whether it's romantic or platonic. Our conversations, once free-flowing and intimate, became stilted and perfunctory. I didn't know how to talk to her anymore, and she didn't know how to talk to me.
How much were they? 485.
Come on, Carrie. That's insane.
Well, that's what they cost.
I'll give you $200.
Okay, this is an awkward conversation.
I'm sorry, I just think that's crazy to spend that much on shoes.
You know how much Manolos are. You used to wear Manolos.
Sure, before I had a real life. But Chuck and I have responsibilities now. Kids, houses. 485. Like, wow.
I have a real life.
Miranda has a kid in the show, and we see her struggle with trying to keep up with her friends and maintain her friendships while also having a newborn. There's an episode where Carrie spontaneously shows up at Miranda's house. It's kind of hard to show up unannounced to a new mother's home, and she's trying to talk about, I think, like, Big or something, and Miranda cannot really pay attention to Carrie because she's trying to breastfeed her child Brady, and they're just completely in two separate worlds while being in the same room. There are certain scenes and episodes that depict this struggle that happens when you have kids and your friends don't. And that kind of isolation and lack of consistent, stable friendships where they're seeing them often contributes to this statistic that 40% of parents report feeling unsupported. It's important to maintain your friendships, not just to get something out of your friends knowing that you might have kids one day, but just so you can enjoy your life. Friendship community is really important when it comes to your quality of life and your happiness. And this lack of support, this lack of friendship is a big reason why so many mothers unfortunately do end up regretting having kids, especially at a young age. Just like your boyfriend or your husband can't be your entire identity, your children can't be your entire identity either. A mother of four who left college at 19 to get married told me, "I've tried everything women are supposed to do. Hobbies, gardening, pickling, joining committees, I can do it all, but it doesn't leave you anything to think about, any feeling of who you are. I never had any career ambitions. I love the kids and Bob in my home. There's no problem you can even put a name to, but I'm desperate. I begin to feel I have no personality. But who am I?" I mean, there's an entire subreddit called Regretful Parents where people share their stories about how they regret having their kids and wish they could have a second chance at adulthood. "I always ask for a day off for Mother's Day. The best Mother's Day present for me is to not have to mother. You know, we're sold this fantasy that motherhood is this glamorous, beautiful, sunshine and rainbows experience that is unexplainable and beautiful, but it's not like that for everyone. And people feel like they're broken or something's wrong with them because they don't have that same experience. And that fantasy is still sold to us through social media and mommy bloggers. One Redditor says, "The mommy bloggers aren't miserable because they have money and a village. Or they're convincing themselves that they aren't just for the views." And with all this, I think we can come to understand why women are opting out of having kids. You know, there's kind of like a sick irony to the United States when it comes to the lack of support for mothers, considering women's rights and access to abortion is constantly being threatened. I think conservatives like to pretend that they love mothers and they love children and think of the children. They don't give a damn about the children and they don't give a damn about the mothers. They just want women to be baby-making machines to keep the labor force going. At least the conservative millionaires. I think the average person just hates women, honestly. Like, to put it simply.
New York Times just put out an article on the ways that the White House is considering incentivizing women to have children in the United States. And if you think this article doesn't apply to you because you're a man or you're not interested in having kids or you were already interested in having kids, it will. Proposals aren't just giving money or a check to women who have children, although those are some of the proposals. The amounts are really measly. Like $5,000 isn't even going to cover the cost of having a child in a hospital in the United States. Some of the proposals are things like reserving Fulbright scholarships for women who are either married or have children already. So 30% of Fulbrights, which is like one of the most prestigious academic scholarship programs in the United States, would now be reserved for women. Another proposal is to increase transportation funding in areas that have higher birth rates. So if you think the subway is bad in New York City now, I guarantee we're all in for somewhat worse subways because I guarantee the birth rate in New York City is not as high as Utah.
It's just, again, ironic because conservatives want to preach that they want to save the lives of children by being pro-lifers, but at the same time will vote for administration that doesn't want to reform gun laws that threatens the lives of children, because America, unfortunately, is known for experiencing mass pew-pewings. I hate that I have to censor myself, but it is what it is. In schools, children are literally losing their lives because of gun laws, because the same people who are so precious about their gun laws also are anti-abortion. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And they're pro-military, too. The United States can spend billions of dollars on the military and literal weapons of mass destruction, but God forbid the government spends a few million on Planned Parenthood. But hey, at least if the woman can't have abortions, they can keep supplying an endless stream of soldiers for the military. Am I right, ladies? But that being said, according to Pew Research, 63% of Americans believe abortion should be legal in all or most cases. So that statistic proves that most Americans are pro-abortion, but based on our administration, I'm not sure how true that is, or at least there are Americans who are like, yeah, abortion should be legal, but they don't care enough about it to reflect that in their voting choices. When it comes to having kids, it seems like you're either damned if you do, damned if you don't as a woman in this country, because for all of the legitimate reasons as to why you wouldn't want to have a kid in this country, aside from just, you know, personal choice, child-free women are still perceived very negatively. I mean, you think about how child-free women are consistently depicted in media. There's the crazy cat lady, the spinster, the cold-hearted, career-obsessed, workaholic boss lady. And really, I think the reason why single child-free women are so enraging to conservatives is fear. Because you can't trap a woman who is free of kids and free of marriage. She is like ungovernable in their eyes, and it's scary to them. I'm child-free by choice and now past the age where I could get pregnant. No regrets. What I have heard from others, you will change your mind. You haven't experienced real love until you have a child who will look after you. When you are old, you are selfish. Is that not inherently selfish to have kids for the sole purpose of having guaranteed elderly care? Like, that's insane. Women are definitely judged more than men. It's seen by many as a woman's role in life, and there is something defective about you if you don't want children. I get looks out of pity from people when I say I don't have kids. I think attitudes are slowly improving. More people are choosing to remain child-free. Of course, the dating pool really sucks right now, so even if you wanted to get married and have a kid, I mean, it just seems like it's harder now. I've talked about dating in a previous video. There's a growing disparity between men and women when it comes to education. More men are becoming red-pilled, which has created a massive divide between men and women politically. Values are different. And, you know, we just live in a different era. We have a lot more options as women when it comes to our careers. And I think the more women achieve in their professional lives, the less they feel obligated to have kids, because they really don't have to. We're not dependent on men to own a house or to own a credit card. And so the need for men and this obligation to have kids is just lessened a lot since like the 50s. And again, that's why single women are so threatening to the patriarchy, because we don't have to shackle ourselves to these obligations. So yeah, I wish there was a more positive conclusion to this video. I guess, you know, as a message to people my age, don't abandon your friends, prioritize community. This isn't meant to like disparage people from having kids, you know? I think there are a lot of human beings still who have that primal urge to want to procreate. I don't think all of these reasons are gonna necessarily stop people from having kids if they really want them. But, you know, I just think this stuff is important to be aware of, especially just as people in society, regardless of whether you plan on having kids or not, like women and mothers need more support. And we need to be more aware of that and more cognizant of that, especially when it comes to our voting and who we choose to put into office. So yeah, I made this video really to like turn our attention to the bigger issue at hand, rather than fighting online over Chapel Roan and whether she hates women or hates mothers and all this distraction that happens online. I mean, we're really not focusing on the right things, I don't think. And like with basically all my videos, I hope that this reminds people to be more empathetic of each other. So yeah, thank you for watching. I hope you enjoyed this video or at least learned something. And don't forget to subscribe, and I'll see you in the next video. Bye!